Okay, so we are reading from a very interesting part of the Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 18th chapter, text 29. Evam Striya Jadibhuto Vidvan Ape Manogya Vadham Iti Aha Vivasho Na Tat Chitram He Joshiti Evam Striya Jadi Bhutahu
Evam Striya Jadi Bhutahu
Vidvanapi manogyaya
Vidvanapi manogyaya
Vadamityaha vivasho Anattaschitram hiyoshati
Anattaschitram hiyoshati
Evam Thus Striya By the woman, Jadi Bhutaha, enchanted, Vidvan, very learned, Api, although, Manogya, very expert, Vadam, yes, Iti, thus, Aha, said, Vivashaha, under her control. Na, not. Tat, that. Jitram, astonishing. He, indeed. Yoshiti, in the matter of women. So translation, although Kashyapa Muni was a learned scholar, he was captivated by Diti's artificial behavior, which brought him under her control. Therefore, he assured his wife that he would fulfill her desires. Such a promise by a husband is not at all astonishing. So there's no purport to this text, and we're going to read the next text with its purport. Somehow or other, I do get all these controversial verses whenever I get to a place, you know. Krishna just arranges it. Vilokyai kanta bhutani bhutanyado prajapataki striyam chakre svadehardam yayapum samatirita. In the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma, the father of the living entities of the universe, saw that all the living entities were unattached. To increase population, he then created woman from the better half of man's body. So, ladies, that's the better half. Remember that. The worst half the man kept. For a woman's behavior carries away a man's mind. So, purport. By his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This entire universe is going on under the spell of sexual attachment, which was created by Lord Brahma to increase the population of the entire universe, not only in human society, but also in other species. As stated by Vrishabhadeva in the 5th canto, Humsas Turiya, Vituni Bhavam Etam. The entire world is going on under the spell of sexual attraction and desire between man and woman. When man and woman unite, the hard knot of this attraction becomes increasingly tight, and thus a man is implicated in the materialistic way of life. This is the illusion of the material world. This illusion acted upon Kashyapa Muni, although he was very learned and advanced in spiritual knowledge, as stated in the Manu Sanghita, second chapter, verse 215, and Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 19th chapter, text 17. Matras vasra duhitrova navi das an oberwet, balavan indriha gramho, vidvam samapikarchiti. A man should not associate with a woman in a solitary place, not even with his mother, sister, or daughter, for the senses are so strong that they lead astray even a person advanced in knowledge. When a man remains in a solitary place with a woman, his sexual desires undoubtedly increase. Therefore, the words ekanta bhutani, which are used here, indicate that to avoid sexual desires, one should avoid the company of women as far as possible. Sexual desire is so powerful that one is saturated with it if he stays in a solitary place with any woman, even his mother, sister, or daughter. Heavy statements. So here, in this verse, there's reference to Lord Brahma's dilemma at the time of the creation. Because his business was to fill the universe up with living entities. And the living entities, all the sages were just like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So they didn't want to be Prajapatis. Actually, they could have been Prajapatis without getting married. Like Lord Brahma had so many children without marriage, isn't it? I mean, he's married. We understand that. But he created, like Lord Shiva, the Rudras from his forehead, Narada Muni from his heart and mature deliberation. I mean, so many living entities could have been created without this, you know, men and women stuff. However, sorry about that stuff. So, it's a perspective of a sannyasi, anyway. Stuff. Anyway. So there could have been living entities created without this, but nobody was enthusiastic. You know, why should we create living entities? It's too much trouble. So Lord Brahma thought about that, and out of his body, this Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, and Shatarupa appeared. This is a story from the Bhagavatam. And they just started to have children all over the place. And their children had children, and their children, and the whole universe became filled with people. So Prabhupada was often commenting on this two English economists, actually, Marshall, who said that the attraction between men and women is the source of economic development, which is interesting. And then he quoted from another economist, who was Malthus, he wasn't such a kind guy, Malthus, or anyone studied Malthusian economics. So Malthus said this is a problem. People are going to be so enthusiastic. Oh, we got our devotees from Croatia, from Croatia West. Didn't want to say Krishna West because you're not allowed to say that, but Croatia West. So, so we're talking about Malthus or Malthusian economics. So this is a little education for you. He said there's a problem. Because of the attraction between men and women, the population is going to increase geometrically. There's actually an interesting thing, geometrically, arithmetically, and exponentially, two different ways that things could increase, or three different ways, sorry. So when we talk arithmetically, things increase like one, and another 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 one. You know, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Pretty slow, isn't it? Geometrically, actually it's exponentially would be more correct about people having children, because people have children, like one and two equals four. How does that happen? You know, one to two, it was four. Anyway, so two people get married and they have two children. That's four people, right? And each of those children has two children. Well, actually, they have to have more. Because if people simply have two children, it's not even the replacement rate, which is a problem
in Europe and also in many countries. Actually, Japan is suffering from that problem right now. Because when you don't have the replacement rate, then you got too many old people. And I think you have that problem here, too. Too many old people, not enough young people, and not enough people to make money to support all the old people like me. So you got trouble. So Malthus understood this because, you know, population wouldn't... Well, he didn't understand that the present situation, but he didn't calculate that people would engage in activities that are against Krishna consciousness, such as birth control, and have less children. You understand? So he thought that people, you know, because of unrestrained desires, and they would just keep having children, and people would have, like, 10 children. And this was the case when Malthus was there in the 1800s. Because people were living out in the country, and when you live out in the country, having more children is actually pretty good because they can help you with all the agricultural pursuits. But when you live in the city, having children is more or less like an expensive hobby. You know, if you calculate, like if someone has a child, how much it costs by the time the child goes to the university and everything like that, it's just, oh my God. And then, of course, if you happen to be Indian culture, then you have to pay for the child's marriage. I was just speaking to one of my disciples who just got his son married, and he had to come up with several ounces of gold at the marriage. I mean, it's really interesting. And how greedy people get sometimes. So anyway, so he gave this gold, you know, gold coins at the marriage. And the people who were taking it said to him, how do we know it's real gold? I mean, if I was there, if I'd given gold and someone said that to me, I said, I'm taking it back, you rascal, you know. So you have these things, and I have other friends who got their daughters married, and at the age of like 65, they had to go into debt, get a mortgage on their property so that they'll be paying off their mortgage until they're 95 years old. So it's pretty expensive. So, but in the old days, you know, when people lived in a more rural environment, you know, they had more children. So Malthus, getting back to our friend Malthus, he said that the number of children will increase exponentially or geometrically, and the food supply will only increase arithmetically. You understand? So food supply will only increase gradually, and there'll be more children, and there'll be less food. And so he proposed some drastic measures, like keeping people from getting married, having sex, or, you know, even sterilizing people. Is anyone familiar with Malthus? No, no one studied. So you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, he was quite cruel. And, of course, we've seen certain things like that happen in Europe, and even in America in the old days, they would forcibly sterilize people. So, anyway, getting back to the point here, which is not so related with the verse, but you know, has some connection. Getting back to the point, then you have this attraction between men and women, and then both the man and the woman get bewildered by this attraction. It's unfortunate. And they say and they do things that they later regret. And one story from the Mahabharata about this is the story of King Shantanu. King Shantanu, actually the whole story that about his attraction to women. He was up in the heavenly planets before he became King Shantanu. His name was Mahabish. And while he was up in the heavenly planets, he became attracted inappropriately to Ganga Devi. This story from the Mahabharata, of course, that somehow or other the wind blew her skirt up and he kept staring at her. And the demigods got really upset that he was acting so brutishly. And they cursed him. Lord Brahma cursed him to take birth on the earth planet. So he comes down to the earth planet. This is a long, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but he comes down to the earth planet, and one day he's walking by the Ganges River, and Ganga Devi, who he was attracted to in the heavenly planets, appears, and he becomes so attracted to her, bewildered, that what does he do? He says, "Will you marry me?" Doesn't even get to know her, you know, no engagement or anything like that. You know, this is bewilderment. He said, "Will you marry me?" And she says, "Yes, but only if you never disagree with me." Now, that's really bewilderment for someone to agree to that, isn't it? If you never disagree. And he was just so enamored with her beauty that he said, "Of course. Why would you ever do anything that would be disagreeable to me?" You know, this is really illusion. And so, as you know, she began to throw all the kids into the Ganges River, one after the other after the other, and he couldn't say anything. Poor guy. And then finally, when it came to the eighth kid, who was to be Bhishma later on, he had to say, "Stop!" And she said, "Okay, I'm out of here." So you see how he just like became so bewildered that he would made such a promise like that. So this is an indication of the bewilderment that one can experience in that particular connection. Of course, also, women get bewildered too. It's not that, you know, generally people will say that, oh, not the poor man was victimized by the girl, but the lady is also victimized by the man. You know, it's an equal thing. And as we mentioned yesterday, this attachment between men and women is actually a reflection of the attachment between Radha and Krishna. So the question is, how do we deal with this? Of course, there's one statement here which Srila Prabhupada quotes, that one has to be very careful of being in a solitary place, not even with his mother, sister, or daughter. So that, of course, the senses, balavan indriya grava, vidvan eva hikarshate, the senses are so strong. Actually, when I first joined the Krishna consciousness movement, I actually stayed away from my mother because I was following this very strictly. And any time I went to visit my mother, I'd bring a brahmachari to protect me from my mother. I think one has to apply these injunctions with some intelligence. So my mother noticed that she was never able to talk to me. And she was, poor mother, she was never even able to give me a hug or anything like that. You know, and I'm her son. I mean, I understand the strictures and the shastras. And so she noticed, she said, "Why are you always bringing someone to protect yourself from me?" I had to make some excuse up. And she also said, "Why you never look at me in the face?" And because, you know, I had read other things in the shastras, like that a lady's eyes are like arrows, you know. I mean, there are injunctions like that. There's a story like the Pururuva story, so many other stories in the shastras. And I was afraid my mother would open her eyes up. I'd look at her eyes, and I get bewildered. You know, this new devotees, you know, they accept things out of context in the shastras, and they apply them in certain ways. And I was mentioning this last night, that when I was a young devotee, I would pray before I went to sleep to leave my body during the night. And one devotee asked me the question, "Were you depressed?" And I said, "No, it's just that I had read the material world was jaya, shishi, vornatai, shishi, panchatatwaki jaya." So I had read that the material world was miserable, so I accepted it. I wasn't miserable, but I have so much faith in the shastras that I read, Dukaliyama Shashvatam. This material world is so miserable, from the highest place to the lowest place. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punavartina Varjuna Mamu Petri Dukantiya Punajanma Navijate. You even go to Brahma Loka, it's all miserable. And I thought, it's miserable. Get me out of here. So, but that really wasn't Krishna's desire. It's miserable, but also there's the statement, Vishvam Purna Shukayate, that if one is Krishna conscious, everything is blissful. But I had taken one half of the statement, you know, one thing out of context, and therefore I wanted to leave my body. Not a very good idea. So anyway, so eventually I understood these things, and now when I visit my mother, you know, I don't always have to have a brahmachari protecting me from my mother, my 92-year-old mother. So, but we do when devotees are meeting with ladies, and I'm using the word ladies right now for a specific reason. There's actually different words in Sanskrit for women or ladies. Actually, Prabhupada, when he was giving Bhagavatam class and he was calling on the ladies to chant, he didn't say Matajis, he said ladies. It was very interesting. So, but one does have to be very careful because of this attraction between men and women. And one should stick with the injunction generally, unless it's with one's mother or something like that, that you shouldn't be alone with a member of the opposite sex unless you're married to them. And of course the instruction is, according to Chandaka Pandit, and I'm going to unpack this instruction, that one should see every woman other than his wife as mother. So this is very interesting. Chandaka Pandit didn't say you should call every woman mother. There's a difference between the two. So why is that, that one should see every woman as mother? What does that do? Well, in the Vedic culture, mother meant someone respectable, someone worshipable, like Mother Ganga, Mother Saraswati. And if you examine Indian culture, people very much worship their mothers. I mean, they maybe have so many other bad qualities, the people, but they worship their mothers. So that's really what it means, that every man should look at every woman who he's not married to as a very respectable, worshipable person, rather than using the word mother in a derogatory fashion. Derogatory means, oh, it's the mothers. You know, it's horrible to use it like that. And if you do that, if you have that consciousness, then there's not going to be that attraction or that bewilderment. An example I can give of that is also from the Mahabharata. One time, our friend Arjuna was in the heavenly planets. And while he was in the heavenly planets, of course, he was getting instructions from Indra and getting weapons so he could fight in the battle Kurukshetra and be successful. So, one thing that happened was that a lady, Urvasi, became attracted to him. Now, the interesting thing about Urvasi, several interesting things, she was created by Naranarayan Rishis when Indra tried to deviate Naranarayan Rishis from their austerities. And Naranarayan Rishis, they created Urvasi, and she's, you know, the most attractive lady practically anywhere. So what happened is that she became attracted to Arjuna. And when she became attracted to Arjuna, she sort of came on to him one day. He was in his room or whatever they have in the heavenly planets, and she knocked on the door. And he said, "Who's that?" And she said, "It's Urvasi." "And I love you." You know, she's pretty direct. And And Arjuna said, you know, that wouldn't be proper. She said, this is the heavenly planets, you know, anything goes here. And she's an apsara, you know, anything goes with the apsaras. She was also previously married to Pururava. You know, there's a whole story in the Bhagavatam. So she was one of the ancestors of Arjuna, which is interesting too. So Arjuna said to her, to protect himself, Mataji, mother. And what do they say? Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. There's actually a story in the Bible about this too, which I'm not going to tell right now. So anyway, so she got so angry that she said, if I can't have you, no one will have you. You should become a eunuch. And of course, for a kshatriya, as we know, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. And for one who has been a strong man, to be a eunuch is worse than anything. So Arjuna was really upset. He went to Indra. Indra said, you know, we can mitigate this curse. Not eliminate it, but mitigate it. That means to reduce it. And we can enable you to become a eunuch for 1 year. And that was the year that Arjuna was Briha Nala. He was in the kingdom of Bharat, and he was the dancing teacher. And while he was the dancing teacher, he instructed Uttara, who was the daughter of the king of Bharat, in dancing. Because in those days, in order to protect the ladies, this is also another interesting thing, the young girls, they wouldn't really, let's say in high-class families, they wouldn't really associate with boys. Or actually, the only males they would see were males in their family. And if someone was a princess, they would actually have eunuchs to teach them and eunuchs to guard the palace. So, and I can tell so many stories about that. But anyway, so that was the system, that the girls were protected like that, and then certain instances, men snuck in, like in the case of Usha and Aniruddha. You know that story? Usha and Aniruddha. That Usha was actually madly in love. She was the daughter of Banasura. And she was madly in love with Aniruddha. And she had Aniruddha kidnapped and brought to her palace. And when he was brought to her palace, anyway, she had a relationship with him. And then it was discovered, and the father, Banasura, tried to capture him. And eventually, Banasura's arms were cut off. And anyway, they lived happily ever after that. That's a long story. So the way to deal with this particular attraction is to see the ladies as being worshipable, not to denigrate them, to consider them lesser or agents of Maya or Maya devis or anything like that. It's to understand the ladies are worshipable and give them respect. And in this way, one can overcome these particular attractions. So this is... And the ladies also should see the men as like their sons. You know, if you got mothers and sons. However, if one is married, one should not see their wife as their mother. Prabhupada commented on that in regard to one particular bogus yogi. His name was Ramakrishna. Anyone's heard of Ramakrishna? And Vivekananda? No. Ramakrishna was a debauchee. And when he got married, after he had been a debauchee, he got married. He's an Indian man. He married a French lady. Has anyone heard of him? No. And he got married, and he basically, because he had been such a debauchee before, he was impotent. At that point. So therefore he decided to call his wife his mother. And not only did he call her mother, he called her the divine mother. Like an incarnation of the goddess Kali or something like that. And Prabhupada thought that was pretty bogus. So anyway, the point is that one should see every other lady other than one's wife as mother. Respectable, worshipable, etc. And then one is protected in this way. And one should be careful not to be in a secluded place with, even if you're very intelligent, even if you're very determined, with a member of the opposite sex. Very simple. And we have one final story I'll tell, is the story of Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra Muni was actually a very determined sage, but when Menaka came, he actually lost his determination, and as a result, this girl, Shakuntala, was born, who was ultimately... she was married to Dushmanta, and then Bart was born as a result of that. So this is all I have to say about this particular verse. I don't want to get too much into controversy here. So any questions or comments? Questions, comments, arguments? Yes. Sundarananda?
I was not in the class, so...
Yeah. I
would like to ask you, from the part which I listened, I like very much your explanation how to deal with this attraction between man and woman, but it seems that in spiritual communities, not just in Hare Krishna movement, there is very often discussions on this subject matter from the point of view which you expressed by, in a funny way, how you visited your mother.
Yeah.
And, but we can see that this tendency to interpret Shastra in a very out of context is very prominent. And from, as far as I know, last 30 years, I'm trying to serve in sharing Krishna consciousness to others. I see that people very often perceive us as human haters.
Yeah.
In the name of protecting, and it seems like Hare Krishna movement is meant just for progress of man. And although our philosophy is we are not this body, everyone is not this body except ladies. So, you know, and we often see in some places, even now, I know some places, that it's such a weird situation that devotees in male bodies, they in the name of protect principles of not mixing freely, they're actually ignoring ladies. But here and there, soon... or later, they become very much attracted to ladies.
Yeah.
So, how to deal with this situation? I mean, you explained we should see ladies as a worshipable persons.
Yeah.
I studied a lot about this, and I find that it's much common that men see, not just in spiritual movements, but generally, that men sees ladies as an object, then ladies sees men as object.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. So, all right. I think we should have a Mount Athos here.
Sorry?
Mount Athos? You know what Mount Athos is?
Yeah.
That's a joke. Okay. Yeah, Mount Athos is a place in Greece where a lot of monks reside, and it's illegal for ladies to go to. So sometimes devotees, in their misinterpretation of Shastra, Vedic injunctions, or whatever like that, they want to do the same thing in the Brahmachari ashram. In fact, there's one country which shall remain nameless in Europe where they have a Mount Athos, you know, they don't call it Mount Athos, but they have an ashram that they don't let ladies in. Anyway. That's somewhere in Europe, and some of you may know where it is, but I'm not going to tell you. So that's really not Prabhupada's system, and that's not the Vedic system. Now, the reason that you have injunctions like this in the Vedic literature, and I explained this yesterday, that appeared to be rather sexist, is that these literatures were written in a different culture where people had different duties. For example, it was more of a rural agricultural culture. The men would be tilling the fields or, you know, agriculture stuff, and the women would be home taking care of the children. So it was a very clear delineation of who did what, and which cannot be translated or transposed or imposed upon the modern culture, which is actually completely different. We're not living in a agricultural culture. And so therefore, in that culture, it was the men who basically wrote the Vedic literatures, with exceptions. There's one prominent lady in the Upanishads called Gargi. There's actually a Gargi Upanishad too. And she was a great preacher of Krishna consciousness, a preacher of philosophy. However, generally it was men. So when you get things written by men, it's written from a male perspective. And so people take that perspective out of context and they try to justify their own, forgive me, insecurities or their own biases. Because naturally, let's say take a male psychology, for example, men like to be controllers. And so if men, or people in male bodies, are given some justification or apparent justification for it, they will take it and run with it. Does that make sense? Even though the Shastras are not giving us that justification, if you read the Shastras in context, you'll see that both men and women are considered spiritually equal. There is no, I mean, there's a differentiation, of course, in the body, but you have great personalities like Queen Kunti, whose prayers are respected and worshipped as a source of inspiration. I mean, Queen Kunti prays, for example, Janmaishvarya Shutasya Shubir, Edamana Abadapuman. She's praying to become detached, just like a man would pray to become detached. Let me become detached from this position, my family, my bodily beauty and all the attachments. Edamana dapuman tuamakot kinchana gochara. So if you understand the Vedic literatures in context, you'll actually see that there is equality between men and women. I mean, maybe different duties in society, but equality between men and women. However, people take things out of context, as I said before, to justify their own prejudices. And that's a problem. Does that answer the question? Or does that answer your point?
Very often in spiritual communities, I will say now, in Hare Krishna movement, we see that this prejudice become like mainstream.
Yeah.
I just recently talked with Bhaktivinoda Tirtha Swami, and we just discussed, and he said, I noticed that very often our people are taught ideology, not real spiritual science.
Right.
Very often, because it's much easier to accept some external changes.
Yes.
Than to go to deep changes of the character of the heart or whatever. So I think it's a great necessity and great lack of discussions on a much deeper level of these things, because. Mm-hmm. It's not the problem if some individual has a prejudice, but if this becomes like mainstream, then it becomes really a problem.
Yeah, and it is mainstream.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, among certain devotees, this Yeah, these prejudices and, let us say, denying ladies the right to do certain services, denying them the right to advance in devotional service. I don't think it's such a problem here in Slovenia, in Croatia. But
we see the issue of women being guru or...
Oh, yeah, that issue.
I mean, I'm not going to controversies. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, that issue. I mean, it's not that controversial. I firmly believe that anybody who approaches Krishna, which Krishna says in the Gita, even if they have whatever birth they have, can become Krishna conscious and become gurus. And Lord Chaitanya says, Kiva vipra kiva nyashi shudra kena nai, ye Krishna tattva veta, se guru hai. That if someone knows the science of Krishna, basically he's saying it doesn't matter what their body is, they can become guru. However, you have people who have their own prejudices for one reason or other. I mean, whether they're racist or they're sexist. And that prejudice may come from the culture that they were brought up in. And then they just misapply shastric injunctions to justify their particular prejudice. And so that's unfortunate. So the question is how to overcome that. It's very difficult, because in any society, whether you're talking about a religious society or in society in general, there is going to be people who are ritualistic, or we can use the word conservative, and there's going to be people who are more open, or you can use the word liberal. And what usually happens in society is that they break up into different groups. And I've seen that in practically, I'm not saying it's going to happen in ISKCON, nay, but I've seen that in every religion in the past, that whether you have the Muslim religion, you have the Sufis there who are very liberal, you know, very similar to Krishna consciousness in many ways. They're impersonalist, but very similar in their liberality. And then you have the Sunnis and the Shiite Muslims, and they're actually fighting each other over minor differences in philosophy, which is quite interesting. And then you look at the any of the religions, the Christianity, there's all these different Christian groups, and you look at the in Judaism, there's the Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform. So my personal opinion is that you're not going to be able to change people who have certain attitudes. But this to somehow or other agree to disagree. And that's why Prabhupada told us to meet, the GBC, to meet once a year to discuss unity and diversity. In other words, there has to be a place. There will always be people who are prejudiced in one way or the other, you know, according to the body. And there will always be people who are not prejudiced, or people who are more open. So you need a place for both. And sometimes it's said that Prabhupada built a house big enough for the whole world to live in. So that means there has to be a place for people with different understandings of the application of Krishna consciousness. We're not talking about different understandings of the Siddhanta or Tattva. We're talking about different understandings of the application of Krishna consciousness. You know, I've seen in my many years that you can't change people who are fixed in their beliefs. So you work with them and you agree to be different. Whether that means there has to be a, let's say, a reform part of the Hare Krishna movement. What type of Hare Krishna? I'm a reform Hare Krishna. What type of Hare Krishna are you? I'm a conservative Hare Krishna. What type are you? I'm a fanatic Hare Krishna. So, you know, everybody have their own little labels. You know, what part of the movement are you? Something like that has to be, because you can't impose that sort of unity on people. That's been my understanding. So my personal opinion is men and women are spiritually equal. They can both do the same services. Just got to be careful of mixing too much. Because if there's too much mixing, it is a fact if a young man and a young woman are alone, then, like we said, butter and fire, makes ghee. There's an interesting story that Prabhupada was traveling with his servant Shrutakirti Prabhu. And Prabhupada told Shrutakirti, don't go into the kitchen in Los Angeles. Why? Because in Los Angeles there are a lot of girls looking for husbands. So, and it's a fact. I used to live in Los Angeles, and it was dangerous to cross the street as a brahmachari, because the girls were sitting out there looking. Also, for the girls, it was dangerous. Anyway, that's another subject about it. So, Prabhupada said, don't go into the kitchen. And Shrutakirti thought, I got to do some service for Prabhupada. Prabhupada will understand if I go in the kitchen. So he goes in the kitchen. And then a few days later, he comes to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I want your permission to get married. Because he went in the kitchen. So what do they say? The kitchen. Don't go into the kitchen. You're ready for the heat. Anyway, so he went in the kitchen, and that's what happened. And, as a result, some nice devotees were born. So the end of the story is, the story ended happily. But the point being, one does have to be cautious. Not to denigrate women and not to denigrate men. But the combination, I probably one time said, well, I'm not going to say that. Well, maybe I'll say it. He said, men are good, women are good. But sometimes the combination can result in an explosion. Just like sometimes you have two chemicals. And I don't remember which chemicals they are. Hydrogen and oxygen, maybe. And each of them by itself, if you just have hydrogen, it's pretty inert. And just have oxygen, it's very inert. And when you mix them together, well, you get water, that's true, but you also get an explosion. So I think people have to be careful about the respect the opposite sex, but maintain caution when dealing with the opposite sex. Don't denigrate the opposite sex. They're good. The ladies are good. The ladies are can preach nicely. The ladies can be gurus. The ladies can do anything. And the men, they're okay too. They can't do too much. But anyway, so they're just agitated. But anyway, so the men can do all that. Women can do all that. And the marriages are fantastic when there's a Krishna-conscious marriage. No problem. But one has to be careful of illicit mixing. Because when there's illicit mixing, there's bewilderment. It's just the mixing that's the problem. It can be a problem if it's not done properly. Does that make sense? And that's my belief. But other people will think woman's place is in the kitchen. That's not my opinion, or else you'd all kill me. Or else I wouldn't get my prasadam today. They'll think that women should stay in the kitchen, they should be barefoot, and they shouldn't speak unless spoken to. And you've got people who think like that. And you got women who think that men are a bunch of brutes. Maybe they're right. So, brutes, you know what a brute is? A brute means like a gorilla. So, whatever, there's going to be people with different opinions. And I have rarely... for example, one of the people who's most conservative in the Hare Krishna movement is one of my good friends. I won't mention his name. He's in India. He lives in India. And I'm still friendly with him, but I disagree with him. And every time I see him, I'll have a big argument with him. And he's married, and he keeps his wife all the time without shoes. Even I met him in the airport with his wife. His wife was walking around the Delhi airport without shoes. So what can you do? You can't change people. And I was his new bhakta trainer, too. But somehow or other he got influenced. So you have to, this is a big world. So does that answer the question, or is that? Yeah, it's a deep subject matter. I mean, now, right now, of course, you brought up the subject matter that the woman guru subject matter. And that's been a little controversial. I was one of the ones who was pushing that most for the last few years. And this last year, the GBC finally agreed that women could be gurus. And there's people on the other side who are ready to kick out the whole GBC as a result of that. So, what do you do? You have to delineate different devotees who have different beliefs and allow them to live. That's all you can do, right? And give them equal rights. Here's a controversial subject matter. Just like in Croatia, I'm going to get really controversial now. There's different devotees with different preaching strategies, right? Do you know about them? So to try to keep everybody with the same strategy is ridiculous. You know, you gotta, like, what is it? Mayo Tse Sung said, let 1,000 flowers bloom. So we have to allow variety. Like Prabhupada said, variety is the mother of enjoyment. So, you know, if you want to be successful in Croatia, now I'm really controversial, you have to allow different people to have different preaching opportunities and respect them. Right?
Of course.
Oh, you agree with me. I didn't know that. You have to allow that. And then you make more devotees. Because people are different. It's not that we can have cookie-cutter devotees. Cookie-cutter, you know what a cookie-cutter is? It's like a mold that you make cookies with, and each and every cookie comes out the same. So it's not in the Hare Krishna movement that we take all the brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, and put them all into the cookie cutter, and they come out like the clone army in the Star Wars. You ever seen Star Wars? No, nobody knows about it. So it's like, it's not that. We don't want the clone army. We want variety. We want everyone to look different. Not that different. But we want everybody to just be persons, individuals. And if someone wants to spread Krishna consciousness by doing yoga, fine. If someone wants to spread Krishna consciousness in different ways, as long as they don't violate the basic principles. The whole point is to make the world Krishna conscious. And unless we allow variety, we will never be successful in accomplishing Prabhupada's mission. So that's the ultimate message. All right, so enough controversy for today. Hopefully none of the verses here, next verses are controversial. Yes, they're actually very controversial. Especially the one we're going to read tomorrow, which is the husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. Oh my God. Why don't we have some nice verses like you're not the body or things like that? No, these are nice verses. There's a, I could change the verses, yeah. I could choose which verse. No. No, all these verses are nice. All these verses are nice, and they bring out different points. I think the ultimate point is variety. You just can't impose or insist that everybody have the same understanding of Shastra. It's just not going to work. I mean, for example, there's different Vaishnava sampradayas. Like if you go to South India, you'll find in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, they have a different understanding. Not of the basic philosophy, but, you know, they're worshiping Vishnu. For them, Vishnu is supreme and Krishna is something Vishnu does in his spare time. Something like that. You know, something. But for us, we follow the Bhagavatam and, you know, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. So when I go there, I don't get upset. I respect their difference. I go there and I have friends in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. They're very wonderful devotees. So, but I'm not afraid of expressing my own opinion at the same time. So we can't kick people out of the Krishna conscious movement who don't agree with us. And that's unfortunate. That is happening in both directions. We have to appreciate everyone's devotion and let them express it. Right? I mean, if someone wants to be a male chauvinist, that's their problem. Oh, sorry. If someone wants to let them start their own movement, they can... Oh, my God. I have to be careful. But anyway... You know, let them have their part of the movement, the International Society for Male Chauvinistic Krishna Consciousness. Who can stop them? But at the same time, you know, we have our own understanding. Unity and diversity. Prabhupada said that in regard to different devotees who come from different parts of the world and may even have different races, Prabhupada said, it's like a flower garland. It's nice because it has different colored flowers. If I just had one color flower, it would be boring. So that's the internet. It's the United Nations of the spiritual world. If people join the movement in China, let them use Chinese instruments and Chinese dress. And if people join the movement in, where, let's say, in northern Finland, let them be Laplanders, you know. Right, that's what they have in northern Finland. I think it's a question of understanding the differences. People will be different. And I'm not demanding everybody be like me. That would be a disaster. Okay, all glorious to Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.